greatest thing about working in the restaurant industry is that you worked with other people and yet you dealt with people on a regular basis. And I think that helps a lot and would help a lot for anybody that wants to get out there. If you want to get anywhere in life, you're usually going to be helping somebody else get what they want, and then you'll get what you want. You know, the amazing thing is if you're already in a business or in a corporation and you're managing a group of people, you're already running a business.
Yeah. You're an entrepreneur.
Yeah. If we go into a recession, then I'm going to get busy.
Okay.
People get laid off, I get busy. That's okay. All there is to it.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I believe that if you can connect with the best, you can become the best. So after creating 800 podcast episodes about building your network, I've come to realize that networking is really just making friends, if you're doing it the right way anyway. Join me as I make friends with world-class athletes like Shaquille O'Neal, entertainers like Rob Dyrdek, authors like Dr. Nicole LaPera, former presidents like Vicente Fox, or even the occasional FBI hostage negotiator, billionaire real estate mogul, or polarizing political figure. So if you want to make more friends that help you become a better version of yourself, then subscribe to the show and keep on listening, because this is Travis Makes Friends. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Travis Makes Friends podcast. Today, I'm sitting down with Gregory Moore. So the reason that I wanted to bring on Greg is that this year, I'm really trying to give practical and distilled lessons to beginner entrepreneurs, people who are maybe at the beginning of the journey, or you're thinking about getting into it, or maybe you're thinking about diversifying your income streams or something like that. And so I just wanted to try to bring on some people this year who are going to help open up the possibilities for you. And Greg is one of those guys. Greg is a franchise consultant, and he's a Wall Street Journal best-selling author of the book Real Freedom, Why Franchises Are Worth Considering and How They Can Be Used for Building Wealth. And so what Greg does, really cool offer, is that he actually sits down with people for free. So he's a consultant that doesn't charge anything, because what happens is you sit down with them for free. And then if you end up really enjoying the concept of doing a franchise, and he helps you pick a franchise based on your skill sets, mindset, experience, the things that you like to do, the things maybe that you have some proclivity toward, he will help match you with the correct franchise for you to go open and start for yourself. So you can become an entrepreneur, but you can use the systems and processes of somebody who's already figured this stuff out by their concept through a franchise, start your own, and now, voila, you're a first-time entrepreneur, or you're, fill-in-the-blank time entrepreneur. But this one will be maybe be a little bit less risky than the last, six different companies that you tried. So Greg is somebody who actually, full disclosure, became a client of ours inside of Guestio, where we represent people, we get them booked on podcasts. And I actually asked him to come on my show so that we could talk about this, because first of all, I was genuinely interested, and I am genuinely interested in opening up a franchise at some point myself. But I also just really like the idea of franchising for people who have never done entrepreneurship, or have maybe dipped their toe in the water. Maybe you're a salesperson or something like that, and so you have some skills in the business world that might translate, like direct sales or marketing or something like that. But maybe you don't have all the other pieces, right? The systems, the processes, the HR, the finance, legal, all that kind of stuff. Maybe you don't know anything about that stuff. Well, if you plug into a franchise, you get all of those things done for you and handed to you, turnkey solution. And that allows you to focus on the thing that maybe you're pretty good at, like talking to people or bringing in customers or what have you. So this is an interesting conversation to have with Greg, and I hope you enjoy it. So please, without further ado, enjoy this conversation that I had with Greg Moore. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Travis Makes Friends podcast. Today, I am making friends with Greg Moore. Greg, what's up? Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Travis. I appreciate it.
Yes,
honored
sir.
To be here.
Yes, sir. Hey, well, we're Vegas is a little bit cold right now. It's insanely busy with CES, like we're talking about. But it's still never a bad time to be out here. There's always stuff to do. There's always good food to eat. All that good stuff. You got anything planned for the rest of the day after this?
I'm gonna go wander around, see what's going on out there in the neighborhood. Looks like there's a lot of activity, a lot of exciting things. So
there's a lot of activity. If you get a second, I don't know if you have like dinner plans or anything, but the Durango Casino just finished getting built about a month ago. They opened about a month ago. And there's a dozen different really good food options in there, like all different types of food. We've probably been four or five times now and eaten at different places every time we've gone. But I haven't had anything that I would not recommend so far. So
excellent.
And it's like a mile from the house here. So yeah, check it out, man. See how it goes. Well, listen, Greg, I wanted to bring you on the show. Well, first of all, for, you know, full disclosure, you're a client of ours. We help you get booked on podcasts and stuff like that. And sometimes when I sign some clients, I go, that's somebody who I would like to talk to on my podcast. And for this particular conversation, the reason for that is that there's a lot of people listening to the show who are entrepreneurs, but there's also a lot of people who are trying to make the transition into entrepreneurship. And maybe they have some soft skills. Maybe they're in sales. Maybe they're in operations or something like that. And they have an inclination that toward business, but they don't really know exactly where to get started and how to get started. And so I thought this is a great topic of conversation. One of the reasons that I was attracted to your offer is in terms of like representing you and you being one of our clients, because we don't, you know, say yes to everybody, was that you don't have like this insanely high ticket coaching program that teaches people about franchises. All you do is sit down, do a consultation, run through like people's wants, needs, desires, you know, different things about their life, and then figure out if a franchise might be a good move for them and then match them with the franchise essentially, right? So, and then if anything happens, then you get paid by somebody else. So you don't even ever charge that person any money. And I was like, oh, that's a fantastic, like that's one of those offers, you know, like Hormozi says that you can't say no to. It's just, it's so good that why would you say no to this? If you have any interest in doing a franchise, why not set up a consultation with you? So I wanted to bring you in first of all, just because, selfishly, my wife and I are looking at doing a franchise at some point in the near future. So I was like, oh, well, selfishly get a chance to ask some questions that, that I have. And probably if I have those questions, there's probably some people out there in the audience who also have those questions. So, just some context there, but before, or just setting up the conversation, but before we get into that conversation, I would like to build a little bit of context, for people listening and answer the question in people's minds of like, well, okay, well, why should I listen to Greg? You know, free consultation sounds cool, but what does that mean for me? So let's go ahead and dive back into your past here, Greg. Let's say 16, 17 year old Greg Moore. Talk to me about family life. Set the scene for us. What was life like for you?
That would be back in 1978. back in those days, most of us that were going to high school at that time, our first jobs were in the food service business, usually the fast food service business. So I just happened to pick Taco Bell for mine.
Okay.
out of all places to go. And as I worked at Taco Bell for a while, and as I moved up in Taco Bell, what I didn't realize is that I was actually working for a master franchiser of Taco Bell. Kathy owned about 50 Taco Bell restaurants.
50?
50 of them. Wow. Throughout the Sacramento, California, Woodland, California, Davis, California area. I lived in Woodland at the time, went to Woodland High School. So I moved up in the ranks with hers, and I started running her restaurants.
So Kathy was balling.
She was. She was amazing. She had 50. I'm like,
wow. In the 70s.
Back in the 70s,
wow,
yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
She was doing great. So that was my first foray into franchising when I got into that. And I thought it was great because I just helped her build up a restaurant.
So you just like you were working in high school.
Right. So in high school, I first started out just bending tacos. Back in those days, you know, the tacos didn't come pre-bent. You just got the flour tortillas. You stuck them in oil. Mm. And that's what I did at the age of 16 for 4 or 5 hours every afternoon.
Did you enjoy school?
I did enjoy school. School was pretty easy for me. It wasn't really, a challenge.
Was working at that time just like something that most teenagers did, or was it something that was specific to you, your family? Was it something that you wanted to do? Did your parents make you get a job? Why were you working at 16?
Most people that weren't wealthy at the time worked, and that's what we did. And we weren't a wealthy family at the time. It was just mom and my two sisters and myself. So I worked. I actually ended up working two jobs after that.
What did your mom do?
She was a secretary.
Okay, so she's making a meager living, and you're just kind of like, I gotta help out here. I gotta contribute in some way.
Got to contribute, and if I want anything out of life, then it's time to go out there and get it.
What was college on the table for you?
It was always a thought in the back of my head, but not at first. No, it was not.
Okay,
not for quite some time. Actually, it was making money to begin with, contributing to the family, and then having some money on the side for myself was the biggest factor at that point in time.
What do you recommend to kids now? So like, you know, obviously cultures changed, landscapes changed, even the worth of a bachelor's degree's changed, the average salary of a college graduate's changed, the work ethic of teenagers has seemingly changed, at least to some degree, whether that's just a factor of they're aware of other options, right? Like now they know that they see people like a Logan Paul that's 27 making tens of millions of dollars a year doing YouTube. And they see that that's like an option, and maybe that contributes to their lack of desire to do so, to do a job that like doesn't excite them or whatever. But for whatever reason, there's some sort of a decline in all of these different areas. What's your advice typically to like a young person, a 16, 17, 18, 19 year old, when they're considering their future in terms of, should I just jump in and just start working, or should I go to college and, you know, move that path?
First thing you got to do is realize the fact that if you want to get anywhere in life, you're usually going to be helping somebody else get what they want, and then you'll get what you want. Zig Ziglar on that one.
Enough people get what they want, you can have anything you want.
Yeah, you can. But to do that, you're going to have to realize that you're going to be dealing with people and you're going to be working with people. So the very first thing to do, and what was the greatest thing about working in the restaurant industry, is that you worked with other people and yet you dealt with people on a regular basis. And I think that helps a lot and would help a lot for anybody that wants to get out there. Now, it's a, you know, it's a minimum wage job, so if you're looking to get rich quick, you're obviously not going to do it that way on that one. And when you see those people that are young getting rich real quickly, you know, it kind of distorts your vision of how life could be.
Sure.
But not too many people get that way. Yeah. You got to realize that not too many people get there. You could try, but it's good to have other options. So always, I would say get a job right away and get to know how to work with people.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. The social aspect, the soft skills of communication and empathy and respect and working well with fellow human being type thing. Yeah.
Very good skill set to have.
Yeah, regardless of what you end up doing.
That's very true. Yeah.
And to me, honestly, it seems to me that that's going to be the skill set to have as a human being, right? Like the more AI comes in and replaces jobs, and over the next decade, two decades, of like, that's just going to be a massive transition in what jobs look like in the next, in really my entire working career from the time from now until I'm 60, 70 years old, you know, like there's going to be a massive shift in that. But I don't think that it's going to be possible to replace like the human empathy and communication skills, leadership, getting people on board for a mission, you know, the persuasion, like all those types of things are difficult to replace with technology. Whereas like doing a job, flipping a burger, putting, you know, bending a taco, you know what I mean? Like those things can be replaced, and that particular job already is replaced, you know, by a machine. So it seems like those soft skills are actually going to be like the most important things rather than these more hard technical skills.
True. You really have to, no matter what you do, if you're going to get ahead in business or anything else, you really have to know how to work with people, because people like interacting with other people.
Yeah.
No matter what's done in the background there by mechanics, by robots or what have you, people always like that interaction, any type of business that you're working in.
So you said you picked up a second job. What was that, also in high school?
Yeah, the busing tables.
Okay, so you were going to school.
Yeah.
And then after school, you were going and bending tacos.
Yep.
And then after bending tacos, you go clean up tables.
Yep.
And how long did you do that for?
Probably not too long for busing the tables on that one. That probably didn't last more than, I think, my 16 into partly 17. Okay. Then I started moving up at Taco Bell and becoming a shift supervisor. And then I, the greatest week of my life is I got to skip high school for a week to go manage the latest restaurants in Davis. I was like,
nice.
I get to skip school and go be a manager. That's awesome.
Yeah. What did that just continue moving for you? Like the Taco Bell thing? So, so talk to me then, like post high school, right? Like your first 5 years out of high school, what was life like?
So right out of high school, then I just, for the first 2 years, so I worked 2 years, became a manager. At 18, then from 19 to 20, I was just managing the Taco Bells.
Okay.
On that and doing that. And then I decided I want to move up into something else, into a different type. So I got into the Lion's restaurant chain of restaurants up there in Northern California. It's like an upscale Denny's.
Okay.
We had a full bar.
And Lions, you said?
Lions, L-Y-O-N-S.
Okay.
I think it might be out of business now, but it was in Northern California at the time, all over Northern California. And I started waiting on tables there and then moved up into management on that one. And then did that actually for probably another 6-7 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. Gotcha. So your 20s was really just like building a hardcore foundation in the food service industry.
It sure was. Yeah. About 15 years, I think, altogether.
Was the goal at that time to get into franchising or owning your own spot or anything? Or were you just completely focused on, I gotta pay my bills and help out my family and do what I'm supposed to do.
Pay my bills, help out my family, and move up as much as possible in the restaurant industry and become a manager on that one. You know, of a bigger chain. I went for Taco Bell, then the bigger one. That's where my goals were for a while at the time.
Did you have like an itch to do something more than that at all?
Always.
Okay.
Yeah, I get bored after a while.
Yeah.
On that one. So I got bored, and That's when I went to school.
What do you do when you get bored?
I look for other things to do. I look for other options. Learn.
Look for other options in within the context of like your career goals? Or are we talking look for other options like I decided to go bowling more or whatever? You know what I mean? Like what specifically does that mean?
Back at the time, it was mostly career goals. What do I want to do with my life? How do I want to live my life? And I was seeing that as a restaurant manager after a while, that those were a lot of hours on there. Especially the Lions restaurant was a 24-hour restaurant, like Denny's. So it has a lot of crazy things going on after hours being a manager of that one. A lot of stories on that one. But I decided that was way too many hours. That was 60 hours or so a week.
Oh, wow.
Being a manager on that one. People would call in sick and that sort of thing. And, you know, you usually had people to cover them, but occasionally you had to come in yourself and do it. So I decided that had kind of a ceiling too on that. I could just go in to become a district manager, and then I had a bunch of restaurants to run. I think, nope, I don't want to go that route. So I was always good at math and physics. So I just said, I'm going to be an engineer. But context of that, grandpa was a mechanical engineer. Dad was an environmental engineer. And then my sister was going to school. My older sister was going to school as a chemical engineer.
Oh, wow. Okay. Gotcha.
So I decided, well, nobody's an electrical engineer yet, so I'll take that one.
So you just went back to school?
Yep. I just demoted myself down to waiter, started waiting tables again. Just told him, hey, I've had enough of this. Can I go back down to waiting tables?
Yeah.
I was in Chico at the time managing the Lions restaurant up there.
Okay.
And I said, I'm going to go back to Sacramento. I'm going to go to Sac State, and I'm going to get a degree in electrical engineering.
That is such a weird path. Like, so when you make that decision to go back to school to pursue engineering after you've been in food service for, I mean, a decade, really, at that point, right? What are you thinking you're going to do afterwards? Like, just go get an engineering job? Or were you planning on applying something to entrepreneurship? What was the intent of moving to that different career path? If it's something that you didn't, because you weren't directly experiencing any of that, right? I mean, you had siblings and family members and things that were engineers, and you had some exposure to it, but you weren't actually doing it yourself. Like, how do you know, I guess, when you're going to make that big of an investment of time, energy, and money into a new career path, how do you know it's worth it if you have not tested it?
You have to investigate the what the engineers are doing at that time, what kind of things that they're working on, and what kind of things that you want to work on. And I've always been kind of fascinated with electronics.
Okay.
With that. So that was where the electronics came in. The electronic things were always kind of fascinating to me, all the different things they were coming up with on that. Remember that just right in 1980 as I was getting out of school or out of high school, they were just coming up with computers.
Okay.
So we didn't have like calculators or anything like that.
Sure.
When I was back in high school. So the electronics is always really kind of fascinated with me. And I was always good at, as I indicated before, I was always good at math and physics. I even got bumped ahead in some of my classes back in junior high.
Okay.
Because I was a breeze. Math was just a breeze to me.
Okay.
And so I figured, well, what business, what opportunity out there?
It's interesting to me. I'm good at it. I have a proclivity to it.
Right.
Yeah, I may as well pursue this.
Yeah.
How long did it take to go back to school?
Oh, I went for 4 years.
So it took you another 4 or 5 years at that point to shift careers. You're waiting tables the whole time.
Waiting tables for most of it. The last year, I quit doing that.
Okay.
And then I just got enough money saved up at that point in time.
Yeah.
So my last year, I was just strictly going to school.
So something about the food service industry kept calling your name, though, obviously, right? So like you get into engineering and then you're like, nah, actually, I kind of want to be back managing restaurants. Like, talk to me about, you know, how do you go from engineering and then starting to actually own your own franchises?
So, was the food service 15 years.
Okay.
Got bored, got a degree, and got a degree in electrical engineering and physics. I thought physics was fascinating at the time, so I did that as well. And then got a degree, then got a job with as a microelectronic circuit engineer with Motorola Semiconductor.
Okay.
Then I got bored with that.
How long did it take for you to get
15
bored
years.
With that? 15 years. 15 again. Years. Okay. Yeah. So we got like blocks of time here. Yeah.
So then I said, that's when, so while I was being an engineer, I went to and said, I need to move up my career in engineering. So always looking for a path, always looking for how do I move up my career? How do I get more knowledgeable, get more educated? So I went and got my MBA.
Okay. Wow. While you were doing engineering.
While I was doing engineering.
You went back and got your MBA.
Yeah, MBA. And that's when I started reading Robert Kiyosaki's books, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Gotcha.
And that's what ruined my corporate career for me at that point. Mm. So his books to that said, there's got to be something better out there. So while I
just, was- Just like the knowledge that there was an alternate path.
Yeah, the knowledge that the alternate path, and then, exactly. That's pretty much it. I think just the knowledge that there's something better out there.
Oh, I could do something different. Yeah. I don't have to trade hours for dollars for my entire life.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly that. So that's when, at that point in time, also an engineer friend of mine, we bought a dry cleaners together.
Yeah.
And it had some storage units on it as well. So as being an engineer and getting an MBA, I also was doing the business on the side. And then I had a couple of rental properties as well.
Okay.
That I ran those on there. But that was it then for my corporate career after that. And so I said, I need to go out and get my own business on that. But I don't really want to get into that private business like that, because that that dry cleaners was really a challenge. Because, you know, we didn't know where to go. We didn't know who to talk to about it. We had to kind of figure it out for ourselves. You know, we had a little help from the guy that sold it to us. He was like, well, go do that, go do that. All right, you're good to go. See you later. And that was it. Yeah. So I thought, you know, I thought back to my engineering days, but my Taco Bell days. And I thought, you know, what was really cool about having those, moving around in those restaurants, in those franchise restaurants, because it was the same thing all the time, over and over again, that I could do no matter which one I went into. I thought, I got to get back into that. That was, I had a lot of fun there. That was probably one of the most enjoyable times of my life. Granted, I was young, no responsibilities, but also the fact that, you know, you could do the same thing because they had that playbook for you. So I said, I got to get back into that, and I got to get into franchising. So that's what led me down the path then to get into a franchise, a telecommunications consulting franchise.
That was the franchise, telecommunications consulting.
Telecommunications, if I can say that right, telecommunications consulting. I looked at a bunch of them. I looked at like 20 of them. I was, you know, doing that.
Different franchises or something?
No, I was clicking all over the place, checking all these different franchises out. So I had like 20 different franchise development people calling me, and I finally got a hold of a franchise consultant, which is one thing I like, you know, letting people know that we exist, because even back then I didn't know they existed. And a lot of people that I work with, they don't know, you know, that we exist. But I got a hold of one, and he cleared up the confusion, made a lot less confusing for me, made it a lot easier, streamlined process to go through to figure out which one would be a good fit for me.
Yeah, because I mean, I feel like a lot of people don't even know that there's franchises that exist that aren't food related, you know? So like, and what year was this that you were looking into this, that you started your first one?
This was 2011, 2010, 2011.
So 2010, 2011, your first franchise has nothing to do with food industry, even though that's what you had experience in directly. And when you would think about franchises, you think typically food, you think like Jimmy John's and you think McDonald's and you think these, you know, big fast food franchises, you know, but you don't really think about telecommunications consulting, right? So, but that speaks to the need for having franchise consultants, is to like show you what's even available out there, and then kind of line up what are you currently good at, what do you enjoy, you know, like what type of profit are you looking for, what type of involvement in the business do you want, right? Like stuff like that. And cause there's so many variables to all those questions, and there's different franchise concepts that might fit for different, you know, personality profiles and interests that people might have, right?
Absolutely, Travis. Absolutely. I mean, the thing we think about is the things that we see all the time. So we're driving around, and all we see is, you know, the McDonald's, the Taco Bells, like you're referring to, Meineke's, Mako, Supercuts, Great Clips. And unless you use the services in the services industry for the franchises, you don't know they exist. So with the Belfour Group, they're one of the largest restoration companies in the whole wide world. They have 1-800 water damage. But if you never had water, fire, or smoke damage, you're not going to know they existed. You probably don't even know that they cleaned up half of the Katrina mess out there. Oh, on there, unless you're keeping track of that sort of thing.
Wow.
So these are the things that you don't necessarily know or hear about.
Yeah. So how was your experience opening up your first franchise?
Oh, it really set the stage for it. Dennis Schooley, the guy who was the franchisor, that he just had that training program down pat. He said, these are all the things you got to do. These are the people you connect with. This is how you contact them. This is how you get your clients. When you get in front of your people, this is what you say to them. On that. So he really set the stage for what franchising was all about, which was great help and great assistance from the franchisor.
Yeah. There's one thing with franchises that I feel like is overlooked sometimes, because it can be overwhelming for somebody who's never done anything in business, who's never left the comfort of their like safe job to branch out and do something on their own, especially when it costs couple $100,000, $300,000-$400,000, you know?
Yep.
It's like, well, I don't have $300,000-$400,000. What am I supposed to do now? You know? And, but right. because it's such a duplicatable, repeatable, completely vetted system, banks will give you money for it. You know, like that's one of the things about opening up a business like that is that it, because of everything that's already been done for it, people that have money are more likely to give you money to start that business than they are to just like come up with your own brand new concept or like to innovate a new idea or just have the software startup or to build the next social media company. You know what I mean? Like those are more like people, those are more like venture capitalists that are taking massive risk and hoping 1 out of 100 investments pans out to the tune of billions of dollars. Whereas like the bank or the SBA, they're happy to give out small business loans. They want to give loans to small business. They want to generate more jobs and more revenue and more spending in the economy. They want to do those things, but they're just not going to do it for like your brand new innovative startup idea that you can't even really explain. And like they go to put it in the, you know, the classification when you're opening up a bank account, they don't even know where to put it in. You know what I mean? Like, well, what exactly is this? Is some e-com thing? What are you doing? You know, but if you go in with a franchise concept that's proven time and time again that the it's the FTC that vets it or the SEC?
Federal Trade Commission regulates a lot of
the FTC. Okay, so the FTC's already vetted the concept. They already have said, like, you got to put together this, like, 300 freaking page FDD, right? The franchise disclosure document. So you have, like, there's so many things that have to be done in order for it to even get to the point where you can even buy into it as a franchise. So because of that, people with money, banks, SBA, like they want to give you money to open up these places, even if you don't have 100% of the money in like liquid net worth or in capital, right?
Correct. Yeah. Correct. The franchises have that proven track record, as you indicated on that. So that part's all good and well.
Yeah.
So we have funding partners that will do that all the time. They do that, they do funding for franchises all the time. That part's pretty simple. Yeah. As long as your credit's, you know, decent, if you got 700 or more credit, you're good. The only other factor that comes into play on that is depending on the type of franchise you're looking at, you just have to have the net worth requirement that meets the franchise for both the, not only for the franchise system, what they're looking for with that net worth requirement, but also
for the bank,
the lending institutions. Exactly.
Yeah. Do they ask for personal guarantees on those loans a lot?
Some do. Some will ask for personal guarantees on that. Absolutely.
Is that you found typically based on credit or net worth or like just the type of loan or the type of business?
Type of loan, type of business that you're getting into on that. Okay. SBA is probably more apt to want that. But there's other forms of funding that you can get into that you don't necessarily need that.
Sure. And then the more you do it, the more they just give you more money. Right, like your very first franchise concept, they might be like, oh, we want to see this and we want to see this and give us more of that. But your 12th one, they're like, oh yeah, what do you need? How much do you need? Where do you want it? Yeah, here's more money.
Once you get a good relationship like that and they know that you're doing well,
Yeah, once you prove that you can operate a business properly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because I think I liken it sometimes to sales because when I first jumped into sales when I was younger, you know, early 20s, I was doing 100% commission door-to-door. And I thought I found like the key to getting rich. You know what I mean? Cause I grew up middle class, you know, and I was just like, oh, 100% commission sales. I'm making six figures. I'm 22 and I work 25 hours a week. This is awesome. Everybody should do this, you know? And I go recruit people and I bring in my friends and I'm trying to convince them to do this thing. And I recruit them. I train them. I bring them out on doors. I show them everything. And then a month later they quit. And I'm just like, well, what's going on? Like, why doesn't this work for other people? And just, you start realizing that like, as a form of sales, 100% commission door to door is one of the hardest ways to like dip your toes in the water. But what I started realizing was that some of those people would have probably been great at sales. Like that experience was enough to turn them off to sales as a whole because it was really difficult and too much rejection for them to face. And they couldn't deal with the lack of knowing that a paycheck was coming or not coming if they didn't sell anything. Like they couldn't deal with some of those things. However, there's a lot of other sales jobs that are like, here's a $40,000 base salary. Here's a company car. Here's benefits. And then your commissions are based off, you know, the like you're targeting 120 a year still or 150 a year still. But here's some guarantee. Here's some base. You know, we give you company leads. You drive around. You meet with the leads. Then you sell them. And it's just like, well, those two forms of sales are so wildly different. But if you jump into this form of sales first, it probably turns you off to you just think that you're not good at sales. You just think like, oh, sales isn't for me, right? And I feel like that's kind of the same thing with franchises and starting a business is like kind of what you were describing with your experience with a laundromat. It's like, we had to figure out everything ourselves. And it was stressful and it was difficult. And we had to find all of the solutions to the problems that were coming up, which there are a lot in entrepreneurship. There are constantly problems. You're constantly putting out fires. So then if somebody does that, that experience might just tell them like, oh, you're not supposed to be an entrepreneur. Go back to your job or whatever, you know? But the thing that I like about the franchise concept is that it's the easier form of selling. You know what I'm saying? Like somebody's already been the pioneer, figured out the majority of the problems, already solved the problems, and are giving you a guidebook and a playbook to be successful with that thing. You know what I'm saying? So it's like the most de-risked way of taking risk that you can get into. And especially now, the reason I want to talk to you now about it is that I traditionally take my extra money and park it in real estate, just put it in real estate. But right now, interest rates are weird. Prices are really high. Cap rates are really low. Just like, man, there's not a lot of places to put your money where you can just depend on cash flow coming in. But it seems like the franchise space is still one of those industries, right?
Oh, it is. Definitely so. Most of the time, you know, that's one of the other things that people think about is the fact that I have to run this full time. I have to be there all day long. And that's just not the case. Unless it's Chick-fil-A. Yeah, Chick-fil-A. Unless it's Chick-fil-A, that's a very strange one. Great people, great company.
Yeah,
but you're going to be there all the time.
But it's not even a real franchise.
No, yeah. it's $10,000 to buy a really good job with some really good people.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you're buying a job at that point. Yeah, but it might be a good paying job, and it might be a great job. You might enjoy it, mm-hmm. but you don't own that restaurant. Like they can take it back from you. They can assign it to a different franchisor or a franchisee. And then bump you to a different store. And even if that store is producing twice as much as your new store, well, you get paid on production of your new store, not your old store. It's like they still own everything. It's a brilliant model for Chick-fil-A.
Right.
But, and you know what? It also provides an opportunity for some people that maybe just like we've talked about, don't have the big risk profile, but want the ability to have some sort of outsized earnings based on the work that they're putting into the store. You know,
that's correct. You're absolutely correct about, you know, some things are good for others and some aren't. It's only 10,000. Whereas when you're getting into a franchise, if you get into a franchise restaurant, you're probably looking at $400,000 or $500,000. It is yours, as you indicated, to sell at the end of the day as well. And that goes for the service industry, which is only like $150,000 to invest in. It's still yours at the end of the day to do it. Yeah. But it is a higher risk as compared to something like a Chick-fil-A because you're putting in your money to it. So in your mind, that's a bigger risk than if you were to go into something smaller. So as you indicated, it just depends on the person. There are different levels of risk. And that's what, you know, I go over with my clients to exactly where they're at on risk levels.
What, when you sit down with somebody, if I were to go to you and just say, hey, look, I want to find like, I'm industry agnostic. I don't care if it's food service or not food service, whatever. I want to jump into the franchise with the best proven profit margins.
Mm-hmm.
What are a few of those ones off the top of your head?
What you want to look at then is you want to look at the ones that have been around for a long time.
Okay.
On that one. So you want to look at in the service industry with the best profit margins because then you don't have all that overhead. So you'd be looking at like the Neighborly Group, for instance. They have about 20 different franchises.
You said Neighborly Group?
Neighborly, yeah. Okay. So that's one that people don't think about all the time, along with the Belfour. The Belfour Group would be the other one that would be another big one like that. So they have the 1-800 water damage. They have Packouts, which takes care of all your stuff after it's been damaged and cleans it all out. They got the Hoods on there where they clean hoods. They've got Ducks where they clean ducks. So they have a few different franchises within their franchise systems, and they've got a few hundred, if not thousands, of franchisees out there. The Neighborly Group, which is the biggest home services franchise company in the United States.
So they when you said 20 different, so they have like 20 different concepts that you could become a franchisee of,
right?
Like roofing or siding or whatever.
Ground Guys, Mr. Rooter, Molly Maids, Mr. Appliance.
Okay.
So you may see some of those on the news or being advertised sometime.
Yeah.
And each one of those concepts, they have, you know, a few hundred franchisees in each one, and they've been around for many years. So that's got not only that great profit margin, because now you're in the services industry where a lot of those don't have a whole lot of overhead on that. But now you've also got a proven track record even more because now you've got a few hundred franchises. And I think on the last check, only about maybe 5% of the franchises in the U.S. today of the 5,000 franchises have 100 or more franchisees in their system.
Wow.
So it
5%.
About 5%, yeah. Wow. So there's a lot of franchises out there, but they just haven't quite grown to that.
Yep.
Now, if you want to reduce that risk, you get into one of those groups, Authority Brands. They have another one with One Hour Heating and Air Conditioning. Mitchum and Franklin Plumbing, Mr. Sparky, and they've got a couple others in there, and they've got, you know, hundreds of franchises in most each one of their brands as well. So now you're looking at a group that has been around for a while, that has built up their franchisees. So your risk factor is going down a lot more.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of franchisees to call upon to get that. Now, you'll come to me and you'll say, you know, I want the one that has the greatest ROI and I want the one that has the greatest amount of money. And I can't tell you that because of the Federal Trade Commission's ruling that if I don't collect that information, I can't tell you that. I can direct you towards ones that where I kind of got an idea of what you're going to be hearing. Because if, you know, I send you to something where you're saying, you know, I want to bring in $1 million of revenue and the franchise brings in $100,000 revenue, you're going to say, Greg, you don't really know what to what you're talking about there,
exactly,
buddy.
Exactly, yeah.
So I kind of got a feeling for what you, I just can't come out and say it, but I can direct you towards those. And
now, the one thing on those service-based ones, so like you want to get into roofing, plumbing, air conditioning, whatever. What if you've never done any of those things in your life? How, like, are they training you from the get-go to just like, hey, your first hire is somebody who's that's a tech that actually knows how to service an air conditioning unit? Like, and then how do you tell, you know what I'm saying? Like, do they require you or want you to have experience in that field? Or are there, is their training just that good where they don't really, it doesn't, it's not, doesn't really affect it that much?
You know, it's funny. I think it's, was it Mr. Reuter said, no, Mr. Handyman, do not bring us handyman. Handyman keep wanting to work in the business all the time.
Yeah.
And we don't want them working in the business. We want them working on the business. We want them growing the business.
Yep.
So, and when you get into other ones that are more specialty oriented, like the Mr. Reuter or the Benjamin Franklin Plumbing or the Mr. Sparky, you're going to be hiring a master plumber or a master electrician to do it. So they're going to be the ones that are really running everything for you. You just work on the business, building the business up, doing that. Their training, as you indicated, is that good.
Yeah.
To where they'll show you everything, everything you need to know about it. You don't need to know how to go in there and and decide.
Fix the drain.
The drain or the AC unit. I mean, if you want to, I'm sure you could do the undercover boss or not so undercover boss and just go in there with your people and they'd appreciate the fact that you get involved in that. But they don't want you in there doing that. They want you outside of that. Going out and letting people
finding
know.
Finding customers, branding more.
You're the local owner-operator of the business. That's what the franchising thing is all about. You're the local owner-operator. Get yourself known in that community.
Yeah.
And go out there and do it. That's what they want you to do.
From the time that you open your first franchise, let's say, you know, you're dipping your toe in the water, you go, you open your first one, but you don't want, like, because I've thought about this in some ways where I'm just like, I mean, yeah, I know that if I plugged into one of those things, I'm, you know, pretty good at selling. I'm decent at marketing. I think that I could like bring a unique spin to the concept and see it flourish and do well. But also I'm like, but I don't want to be an operator of, you know, air conditioning business for the next 25 years, you know, if that makes sense. So at what point along the way do you see where franchisees start being able to kind of pull themselves out of the business, find a general manager? Like, is this a multi-location thing? Do you have to have 12 of those franchise locations or three? Or, you know, is that just dependent on profit margin so you can hire somebody? What have you found to be typical? Like, if you're getting into franchises because at some point you just want to start opening more and have some passive income coming in, how long, I guess, is the path to passive income? Because a lot of it's different than real estate. You know, like you buy a rental, you can have property manager and you basically do nothing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you still do some things, but out of 365 days, you're, you know, thinking about that property, maybe 20 to 30 of them, rather than like every single day when you own a business. So what's the path to passive income on franchises?
So first off, some franchises will allow you to be semi-passive owners on that. So 10 to 15 hours a week is what you're doing. And it doesn't, both industries or both types, the brick and mortar and the service industry.
When you say they allow you to, I'm saying, like, does that mean that like they just technically their rules allow you to run it that way? Or the system is set up so that you can run it effectively, even if you only have 15 hours a week or whatever?
Both.
Okay.
Both. So the first of all, they've got to want it. Just like if you remember back when they were on that movie, The Founder, with the guy from McDonald's, he realized pretty quick that doing that semi-passive thing was not the way to go for him. He wanted the owner-operator. He wanted husband and wife, or in this day, spouse, teams to run it.
Yeah.
Because the semi-passive didn't work for him to begin with. Mm-hmm. Same thing with some of these other franchises. Some of them, semi-passive will work. Some of them, they won't.
Okay.
But you want ones with the model that's already set up.
Yeah.
Semi-passively to do that. So you can really start that from day one. I think I have like four franchises that you can actually do completely passive.
Okay.
Where they actually have a management team that they'll put in place for you. So you don't have to think about it all much.
Okay.
On there. But from day one, and it just depends on the industry. But what you're looking for is the fact that they've done it a few times, so you're not the first semi-passive owner.
I want to be the test, yeah.
Unless you're a brave entrepreneur, which I still get brave entrepreneurs, some emerging franchise brands, that they can do that. But they'll have that model already set up for you, and they allow you to do it.
Okay, got it. So when you first sit down with somebody, what's like the first question you typically go into? What's the first, what are the first, you know, steps that you're trying to uncover?
So the first thing I do is just say, you know, ask me anything you want and tell me all about yourself.
Okay.
On that. So when they tell me all about them, which they usually start off with is I get kind of a feel for them, where they're at in life.
Yeah.
On that sort of thing. And then I said, you know, ask me anything you want about franchising. So we can get out of the way right away if they have any misconceptions on that. Yeah, I heard that, you know, if I get into this donut franchise that, you know, by the end of the year, I should be up to like $1 million, a couple million dollars in revenue and a couple hundred thousand and, you know, taking home pay. And I'm like, no, you're not going to be rich quite that quick. It's going to take a little while. So we want to get those things out of the way to begin with on there to make certain that they have realistic expectations.
Sure.
Of what's happened on that. So those are the first questions is just, let's get those expectations out of the way so I can really figure out if those expectations are real or not for what you have, and then give me some background about yourself.
Have you found that there are certain people who shouldn't open a franchise?
Yes.
In terms of personality or whatever?
Yeah. My younger entrepreneurs quite often are a bit of a challenge.
Okay.
Because they want to do a lot of the things themselves. On that. My older entrepreneurs, not so much, because they have done it themselves and they don't want to go through all that again. I still want to run a business. I still want to go strong, but I know what it takes to build that business up from the start. I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
So some of the younger ones where they want to necessarily, they want to get into a franchise, but they have their own ideas a lot of times to do that. And I can usually figure it out if they don't like to follow my process. My process is pretty simple. I have a pretty simple process. You know, you schedule a call with me. You know, you get to know me to make certain that you're okay with me. I send you out a questionnaire. You get that filled out. We set up another call. We talk about you for a half hour, hour. You know, if they can't follow that, can get that questionnaire filled out too good. It's kind of, you know, short and clipped and so like that. It's probably not a good fit because you're not wanting to follow that sort of thing, because that's what the franchise is all about, is you've got that playbook, follow it. Don't try and be different to begin with. So a younger entrepreneur that really has their own ideas about things might be a little
cocky.
Yeah.
Yeah. hasn't gotten beaten down by life yet. Yeah.
Like the rest of us. Yeah. There you go.
Oh man, that's funny. Okay. So you came out with this book, Real Freedom, which I want to make sure we talk about, why franchises are worth considering and how they can be used for building wealth. Where can we find a copy of this?
Go to my website, franchisemaven.com.
Cool. Franchisemaven.com, which is also where they can set up a consultation with you if they want to explore opening up a franchise for themselves.
Yeah, you can just go to schedule a call with me, or if you click on more information and you give me your address, I'll send you out a free copy. And you don't even have to have a consultation with me. I'll still send you out a copy just to give me your address.
The question really, Greg, is why? Why do all of this? You've been successful in your career. You have multiple investments. You have money coming in. You got high net worth. Like, what? Why do this now at this stage?
Because the book was because everybody kept asking me the same questions over and over again. So I thought, and you know, in franchising, you know, it sounds like a nice, I wouldn't say job to have, but nice business to run. But there's a lot of people that come to you with just one information. So I thought, okay, if you just want information, that's fine. Yeah. I don't need to have to necessarily sit down and talk with you. And you don't always want to sit down and talk with me on a regular basis.
Sure.
So why don't I just put down the process that we go through, that how to find that franchise, how to investigate that franchise, and give you some real-world examples of people that I worked with so that you can go through there. And you get to know me a little bit in the book, too. And I realize there's other franchise consultants out there. So, you know, go out there and check out a few. I'm hoping you'll come to me. But in this case, you'll get to know me and you'll get to think, you know, that's somebody I want to talk to, or I've got enough information, so I'm good for now.
But yeah.
I just want them to have that information.
So then why do this at all? So that answers why the book, but why franchise consulting? Why not just be good with the stuff that you've already done and keep doing all that stuff? Why are you doing this?
because everything that I do on the side doesn't quite fill up my entire day. So I still have about 3 hours left each day. So I need to fill it up. So I'm just
back to being bored.
Back to being bored.
Been another 15 years, I guess. Yeah.
I got, in case you're wondering, 10 years now in the franchising world. Yep. So if you're going to give me a call, you got 5 more years left to do before I'm going to get bored.
No, you got to go do something else.
I just enjoy
podcasting.
Yeah. Point, yeah, there you go.
There you go.
I just enjoy helping people and I enjoy talking to people. I live out on the farm out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I do we got a lot of critters, a lot of farm stuff, but I got a few hours each day. So I like to get all this information out because not everybody's going to be doing it. So it really kind of whittles down the ones that are real serious about it.
Sure.
So then I can spend about 3 hours a day. And it's a lot of fun that I still enjoy talking with people.
Who would be somebody out there who you're like, I've seen people in this career type or personality type or something that I feel like these people should be looking at this option so much more than, and they're not doing it. So like for me, for instance, like we do a lot of work with teaching people podcasting and teach people how to create content, teach people how to put stuff out there online and everything. And there's always like a couple of vocations that I'm like, I don't know. I can't fathom why you wouldn't be doing this if you're in this space type of a thing. Is there anybody that you're looking at? Like, you know, that you're like, man, these people should really, really consider a franchise, even more so than others.
Absolutely. Podcasters. No, just kidding. Not kidding, but sort of. People who have, you know, the amazing thing is if you're already in a business or in a corporation and you're managing a group of people, you're already running a business.
Yeah. You're an entrepreneur.
Yeah. There's no reason in the world why you shouldn't. And it doesn't matter which one. Just pick one.
Yeah.
Just come to me and tell me, Greg, go give the ones with that have the most money coming in. I don't care what it is. I just want to make the most money again. I'll send you a few.
Well, how realistic is it to like be working a 40, 50 hour a week, high demand, high stress job and still open up one of these on the side and have it be successful? How realistic is that?
Very realistic. I did it when I was an engineer. I worked from 7 to 5, sometimes more than that on there. And then I got into...
Seven to five, like at your job.
At the desk. That's what I didn't like about it.
Okay.
Got to be there at 7. Can't leave before 5. You get dinged.
Yep.
They want to see you at your desk. It's okay if you take a half an hour or so for lunch.
Yep.
Most of the time. But they want to see you at your desk. So that's why you got to get away from that. You really, I did that and I did the dry cleaner thing, but I could still do it. And I didn't know anything about dry cleaning. I didn't have anybody to help me out with the dry cleaning.
Yeah.
Just me and my engineering friend. Sweet of that. So with a franchise, you've already got somebody there that's going to help you out. So you'll be one step ahead of me that I was. And I was a manager in the restaurant industry for a while. So I was good at people and knew how to manage people, but it can be done and it is realistic. You will sacrifice some of your time. To get to where you want to be, you're going to have to take a look down the road and see what kind of sacrifices do I want to make.
It's unrealistic to think that it's going to be completely passive.
It really is, no matter what you do, because it's your money.
Yep.
You're spending it. So your mind, no matter what, I mean, if you put it in the stock market, your mind's still on a little bit. You put it into real estate, your mind's still on a little bit. At first, your mind's going to be on it quite a little bit more than just a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's still very realistic, but you got to realize that if you're going to get into something like that, unless you just want to step away from the job completely, some sacrifices must be made. And it really just comes down to, is this the time and place for you to make that sacrifice? Or not.
Yeah.
And that's what I help people with decide.
And that'd be kind of one of the things that they roll through with you as well, to be like, hey, look, I don't want to like, I actually like my job. I don't want to leave my job. I like my job fulfills me, but I have $100,000 in this account, $50,000, $150,000, whatever. I got some money sitting here that I don't know what to do with. And I want to put it in something that's going to generate me some money that also has some long-term benefits. If I continue to open up more of them, you know, like what can I do that would enable me to successfully run something on the side while I'm working 40, 50 hours a week. And then you would kind of have different recommendations based off of that specification.
Oh, absolutely. We'll take a look at what we did before. It's just, you know, what do you like? What do you like? What do you don't like? So it just comes down to if you're looking for semi-passive, I already know how much time you want to put into it, 10 to 15 hours. So now it's just a matter of what types of businesses do you like to run? And people don't know what types of businesses they like to run. They know what types of businesses they do not like to run. So that's where we start. I ask them right off, what is there any industry or business out there that you do not like and that you want to stay away from? So I start from there. And then what I'll do is I'll come up with 4 or 5 different businesses in different industries. We'll start from there. It's all about education with me. I'm all about educating people about the options that they have.
Yeah.
Once you start getting that education, once you start looking at those franchises, then you really start thinking about them. I got a matrix of business types that'll help us out. That gives us different types of franchises, different types of businesses, and different sectors that we have on there. But once you start, you know, getting into that and you start learning that, then the creative mind starts flowing. Then people really start thinking, oh, I can do that. Oh, what about this? Or what about that? So then we really start narrowing it down from there so that we can hone in on just that one. That's a good one for them.
What are some of the most underrated franchises you think? Like industries or types or actual brands that you work with that are just really underrated that you're like, this one doesn't get enough attention, but it's a really great one to own.
Sure. Fibernew. Leather, vinyl, plastic repair.
Fibernew.
Fibernew. Yes. Who doesn't need leather, vinyl, plastic repair?
Hmm.
You think about any kind of business that you go into, they've all got it. They don't want to have to replace that piece of furniture or anything like that. Boats, hotels, restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
You make it look better than almost brand new again.
Hmm.
It's a very high, it's in a niche. The niches are really what brings it out, that sort of thing. The restoration industry, that's one where people don't think about.
Restoration, like water from flood fire. Damage or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They think of, hurricanes, which we think of when we think of restoration.
Well,
hurricanes
roofing,
or natural disasters don't happen all that often.
Right.
Well, you'd be surprised how often that those pipes break or that a fire breaks out somewhere or, you know, somebody's got a hoarding issue to deal with. That's a niche industry itself. And it's a business-to-business industry if you're into business-to-business because you're working with the insurance companies rather than working with the consumers. Mm. You help the consumers. You're the consumer supermen or superwomen.
Yeah. I assume, is it easier to get paid out from insurance companies than it is consumers, or is it more difficult?
I don't know that it's any harder. I've never heard or had any issues with anybody going into that sort of thing. The franchisors have it down pretty good.
Yeah.
And they've got their relationship with those insurance companies.
Yeah. But it makes the sale easier, right? Because at that point, like the customer is not even paying for the product.
Right.
Like you're coming in and saying like, hey, do you have damage? Yes. Would you like that fixed? Yes. Okay. Would you like to not pay for it? Yes. All right. Sign here. You know, like it's seemingly a pretty easy sale compared to some other products where you actually have to build value in the product and differentiate yourself from other competitors and convince them to go with you versus somebody else or something like that, right?
True. But most of the time it's from the insurance company that calls you up and says, I got a customer that I need you to go fix.
Interesting.
It's not from the...
So the leads are actually coming from the insurance company.
That's why it's business to business. You get in front of those insurance company. That's where we have a great franchise that puts you in front of those insurance companies. That when that happens, consumer calls insurance company calls you. You're just B2B, but you're helping those people out. They're super people.
Wow.
I'm going to go fix it for you. You're good.
Interesting. So they provide the leads and they pay you for the job.
Yep.
And I assume the franchise actually has a lot of those relationships set up, and they're not going to let you open in a location where they maybe don't have those things set up already.
Right. That's essential that they've already had have relationships with those people. That is correct.
Yeah.
With those in different insurance companies in the area that you're in, they usually have them throughout the United States. So if you're going to get into a restoration service franchise, you're going to make certain that they have those.
What about car washes?
I haven't seen too many car washes recently.
Really?
Amazingly enough. You know, we used to have a couple of them, but I don't see them coming out anymore. For some reason, they went away. The same thing with laundromats. I don't see a whole lot of car washes, and I don't see a whole lot of laundromats anymore.
Hmm.
We've got a couple of them.
Do you have any theories as to why that is?
Just not a big a car or laundromat. Yeah, laundromats are rather expensive, a high investment on that one.
To get into, to open?
Yeah, because of the equipment that's required on that.
Sure.
And I think there's a lot of them that you can just buy that are pre-existing, that are privately owned.
Yeah.
That there's not a huge call for them.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the car washes. I haven't had a whole lot of people or hasn't been a real big call for that. Although we do have a few. It's usually that comes with the other automotive franchises. They'll have that as an add-on to getting into the automotive, their automotive.
Like thing what?
Is that they'll have, so they'll have your mechanical shop here. And then they'll put on a car wash adjacent to that.
Gotcha. Okay. But in terms of like the actual car wash by itself, there's not many of those.
No. It might be that they're just not making that by themselves the kind of money that most people are looking for.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Is there, besides restoration and stuff like that, if you're looking for food service specifically, what are some of the best ones over there? Is it still like Jimmy John's and Jersey Mike's and stuff like that?
Yeah, a lot of the sandwich shops are, they still seem to be doing pretty good. Teriyaki Madness is probably one of the ones that we work with that are doing. They got over 100 franchisees for the Asian food market on that one.
That's great food. I like it.
Yeah.
I don't order it enough, to be honest. I always forget about it. There's one like 10 minutes from here. Ah. But yeah, it's really good food. I like those ones.
Yeah, they're doing good. But yeah, some of the sub shops, like Jimmy John's, are still doing good. I don't work with those folks. I couldn't tell you specifically how they're doing. I work with Teriyaki Madness, and that's probably one of the largest ones that anybody would know about that I work with on a regular basis.
Okay. So it sounds like you are more setting people up outside of the food industry. Was that correct to assume or no?
That is, mostly because of the fact that when I ask that question, what industry don't you want to get into? It mostly comes out as food for some whatever strange reason or other that people just say, I don't want to do food.
Well, food tends to be like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, you had a lot of experience in this area, but like food industry is one of the more difficult ones to be successful in, right? Just because of sheer competition, like liability, health services, sourcing products, specialization in preparing the food in terms of like the more complicated it is, the more difficult it is to find people that are skilled enough to actually make the food and not screw it up, right? Like this more specialized work, margins tend to be lower. It's more expensive to open.
I think it's margins and more expensive. You can still get the people to do it. And with a good franchise, we got a couple good bar out there that I work with once in a while, but I think
a good bar, you said?
Yeah. I forget what it's called. I'd have to look that one up because it's a $1 million investment on that one. It's a sports bar, restaurant thing, but getting the people is not too much of a challenge because they've got the menus and everything there for you on there. So that's, you get a lot of turnover in that one. Okay. I think it's just the expense and the fact that, as you were alluding to there, Travis, that there's a lot of intricacies that are involved with that. You know, you've got your health inspector coming in on a regular basis. You've got your hood inspector, which is where we were talking about hoods before, the Belfour Group. That's what hoods does, is go on there and cleans those out. So there's a lot of little things that you have to keep track of. I have to keep track of as a restaurant manager that people just don't necessarily want to get involved in.
Do you find the restaurants have a correlation to the economic cycle at all compared to like some of these service things? Because some of the services, like, they're going to always be needed. You always have to have certain services, regardless of if the economy is doing well or the economy is doing poorly. Food seems one of those things, like, seemingly people would make the correct decision when they're running out of money and they would just go buy bread and peanut butter and make peanut butter sandwiches. But people are consumers, you know, especially Americans. We were built to consume, and we're especially built to consume food. Do you notice downtimes when the economy's down or when the economy's up? Is the restaurant business surging or is it compressing or anything like that? Or is it pretty much always, you know, something that people engage in?
It's always something that people engage in. Now, don't get me wrong, restaurant franchises aren't bad or anything like that. They're just different to run and it takes a special person. As we were talking about the different special people that we can do it. The biggest challenge I think that the restaurants had and that any brick and mortar place had was during the COVID when it was hard to get people to be able to go in there because of the city's directions on that. So the restaurants that really took off were the ones that will give the takeout services, curbside services, or you could do that, or delivery services if you could do that. But they do have a tendency, I think. We had a big surge in yogurt, if you remember.
Oh yeah, frozen yogurt.
Yeah, frozen yogurt.
That was the shit for a while. Yeah,
let's go do that. Yeah. And then my funding people, they finally, the first time that I've been working with them, said no more. Don't bring us any more of that frozen yogurt stuff.
Really?
That frozen stuff. We're not touching it because too many of them are closing down because it was a fad. So that was another thing you got to watch out for.
Interesting.
Is when you're looking into a business like that.
It was a fad from a consumer standpoint. So like people just aren't buying frozen yogurt as much as they were.
No, doesn't appear so because we're not seeing that. I think it was a big thing that all of a sudden everybody liked frozen yogurt. They thought it was a big thing. And then all of a sudden all these franchises, all these businesses that were doing just fine as local frozen yogurt shops, they said, or they thought that, well, I can just expand. I'm doing so well here. Why don't I expand out? And everybody did it at the same time for whatever reason. And that was kind of like a fad. And I think it kind of went away after that. So you got to be kind of careful.
I've noticed a couple of ones that we used to go to, like around here, are closed. They were there for like a year, year and a half. And then, They. But I mean, to your point, when we were in there, first of all, the service was terrible. and then they ask you for a tip. That was like the weirdest one for me. It's like, I understand food industry and tips and stuff. And I'm typically a very generous tipper for actual people that deserve tips. Right.
Right.
But yeah, the frozen yogurt ones drove me crazy because like I do everything. I'm serving myself and then I'm putting the toppings on and then I set it on the scale and then you flip the thing over. I put my card in. You don't touch anything except for flip the screen to me. And then you ask for a tip on that. I just like got so frustrated with that. And then like the whole time they're sitting behind the counter on their phone. Like, don't even say hello. You know what I mean? It's just like, what, you want a tip for spinning the screen to me? Like, I could have done that too. So like, why don't you give me a tip for doing all of your work for you? You know what I mean? So yeah, it seemed in that particular location too, it just was never busy. Service was terrible. There was yogurt on the table. You know what I mean? It's just like, when it closed down, it was not something that was super surprising to me. But it's interesting that that's not just my anecdotal experience. It seems to be a trend if finance companies won't even back them anymore.
Yeah, that was probably 5-6 years ago, I think that was, if I remember correctly on that one.
Wow.
That it was. So yep, look out for fads on that when you're getting into businesses.
Are you seeing any like really cool, new, innovative concepts coming out right now that you're excited about?
The one that I'm watching right now would be the ones where they center around robots and taking over for people in like hotels, motels, that sort of thing. That's one to keep an eye on. I don't know if it'll go anywhere.
Explain more about that. So you're saying that the company provides that service for hotels and stuff? Or
okay, yeah, you'll have a franchise that's coming out that's doing that, providing that service for a hotel and motels. Gotcha. And I know that they are selling franchises right now. That is one to watch.
Interesting.
I don't know. I don't think anybody knows at this point in time where it's or how far it'll go.
I'm curious to see how long it'll be before they have the, have you seen those bars with like the robot arms and they like serve you the drinks and stuff? It seems like somebody will make that into a franchise concept at some point, a bar that's just the self-serving robot ones instead of having actual bartenders there. But that would probably be a fad as well.
Yeah, that's again, if you really have to, when you're looking at those emerging franchises like that and the new things that are coming out, if you've got a lot of extra money and you don't mind taking that risk, it just may be the next best thing. You know, sure. If you went with Orange Theory at the time, who knew that would have taken off?
No kidding. Yeah, that's crazy. Is that a pretty profitable one?
That one's one of the fitness franchises that really did really good and really took off.
You know, I got hit up the other day by this franchise that they're franchising the concept of these, the like street bars, you know what I'm talking about? Where like, if you go to Nashville, there's one on every freaking street corner with a new bachelorette party in there, like wooing to death. Right. You're like pedaling. It's like you're inside pedaling and then you get served drinks or whatever. But I got somebody reaching out to me trying to sell me one of those franchises, like a month or two ago. And I was like, oh, that seems kind of interesting. It seems like probably really low overhead, probably pretty cheap to get into one and just to test it out. And I happen to live in Vegas, you know, so it's probably not a bad place to start one of those. But it's also kind of one of the questions I ask myself is like, that might do well for a couple of years, but is that like once it's seen all over the place, is it really going to continue doing well? Right, like the scooters. I think the first big scooter business. It's not Lime. It's the other one, Bird. I think I just read something recently on them. I don't know. Maybe you can check me on this, Eric, so I don't stick my foot in my mouth. But I think Bird went out of business, went bankrupt, or something negative, like a big negative headline that I read in the news about them. See if you can find anything on that, Eric. And
bankruptcy?
Yeah, so Bird filed bankruptcy. And it was one of those things that was just like, it seems like that would just do really well. Why isn't that, you know what I mean? But had to be one of those fad things where it was like, this was cool for a while, but now it's kind of flooded. There's like 6 different types of scooters on the corner. I have to download 5 different apps if I want to really use it to get around town. They clutter up cities. People don't actually like the look of them anywhere. And once the novelty, you know, dies down, so does the demand. And then all of a sudden there's too much supply and then the goes out of business. That's kind of what I was thinking about that biking bar franchise. It was just like, maybe that would do well for a little while, but as soon as like people got used to seeing them flooding the streets everywhere, I just feel like it wouldn't be as cool of a thing. You know, I could be wrong though. I could be wrong.
That's the tough part when you're getting into the emergency ones is just, predicting that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can kind of predict the stock market to some extent, but it's the same thing that you're doing with that. You're just kind of gambling a little
bit. Just pick the boring one, guys. Just pick the boring one.
Essential services, that as we're talking about, I mean, if it's broke, it's got to be fixed.
Right.
It's got to be fixed now. It doesn't matter what the economy is doing.
Like, you will have to have AC this summer.
You will.
Yeah, right. It's not an option.
Got to be able to flush your toilet, so that plumber is going to be out there. Got to have those lights to get that electricity on. It's just some things that are just not going to go out of style.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why I love this conversation, man, because there's so many options, you know what I mean? There's so many different types of things that you could do, you know, different risk profiles and everything. But I appreciate you coming on the show. Is there besides your website, anywhere else that people can go connect with you or anything?
Oh, just go to my website or just send me an email at greg@franchisemaven.com or just pick up the phone and give me a call at 361-772-6401.
Rewind that back. Listen to that. You have somebody giving out their number to give them a call who's an expert in these things. So take advantage of that stuff. That's why we do the show. It's called Travis Makes Friends, so that I can make friends with really interesting people and you guys can all share in that friendship. So go, if you are curious or interested about any of this and you're not really sure you want to take the next step and book a call or anything, then go pick up a copy of his book at franchisemaven.com. He's not going to bite. So don't be afraid to schedule a consultation, sit down with them and see if this is a path that might be working well for you. Last question for you before I let you go. Great. Or actually two more questions. This one is there heading into a weird year? It's an election year. Interest rates are kind of screwy. They're saying they're going to come down. Pricing is really high. Inflation is rampant. Like, are you seeing anything from a macroeconomic perspective that would prevent you from recommending people to jump into franchises at this time? Or is it just going to change up your recommendation on the franchise?
Yeah, it won't make any difference whatsoever.
Okay.
On that, if we go into a recession, then I'm going to get busy.
Okay.
People get laid off, I get busy. That's all there is to it. The businesses that you get into are, and especially if you don't want to have to worry about getting laid off, and just like we talked about, Travis, if you want to get into essential services, we'll get one that's available in your area and we'll get you a good one and you'll get busy. That's all there is to it.
Cool. Last question then for you. This is a question I've asked hundreds of people on the show. Curious to hear your answer. Who you know or what you know, which of those two is the more important asset in life and why?
What you know is always good. It's always good to be educated on that. You can investigate who knows the best, but what you know and the more of what you know about is always essential. Education is absolutely essential in life.
Greg, thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate you coming all the way out to Vegas for this. We'll continue getting you on some more shows as well. In fact, if you're watching this and you're interested in having Greg on your show, reach out to my team at Guestio and we will make the coordination happen for you. Thanks so much for doing this, dude. This is really awesome. Thanks so much for everybody watching, listening, for tuning in. Catch you guys on the next episode. Remember to leave every relationship better than you found it. Peace. That's it for today's episode. Thanks for spending some time with me and my friends. If you want to be better friends with me, then head over to travischappell.com/team to subscribe to my free newsletter, Your Friend Travis, where I share what's on my mind about life, building a business, raising kids, being married, and anything else I would normally share with my close circle of friends. That's travischappell.com/team. And my biggest ask of you, since I'm sharing my friends with you, is to share this episode with a friend of yours that hasn't listened to the show yet. Then leave us a quick 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts and in Spotify. It would mean the world to us as it helps us make sure that this show continues to be more valuable to you. Thanks in advance, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.